Welcome back, or good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. I'm Jim Rome. We start hour number two. Very quickly, a reminder, the program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Another quick reminder, our What's Your Beef segment. We do this once a week. It is next segment. Next segment. So you want to get in with your beef. I don't care what your beef is. Hit me up right now. Call with that beef. 1-800-636-8686. Hit me up with the beef on Twitter, at Jim Rome. Do it, but do it now, because that segment is coming up next. We start hour number two by having a conversation with an NFL insider for CBS Sports, CBSSports.com. He appears every Sunday on the NFL Today during the regular season and the playoffs, and he does so from a multi-million dollar set that you've seen. It looks amazing. He is a good friend of the program. He is co-host of Inside Access on 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. He is Jason Lockenfora, JLC. How are you?
Wow, that might have been the best introduction ever, Jim, which is saying something, because you've rolled out some dandy ones for me before, but wow, I feel warm and fuzzy all over.
My brother, I'm hyped on you. I'm always hyped to have you on, so you know it. Jason Lockenfora, my guest. JLC, what about the NFL trade deadline? Let me start right there.
Yeah.
The NFL trade deadline, though, is very different from the NBA trade deadline and the MLB trade deadline in terms of trades and big names moving. Jason, why is that, and what was your reaction to what you saw yesterday?
You know, I think part of it inherently has just been cultural. There's been this sort of lingering old-school thought that it's hard to make football trades because it's 11-on-11 plus special teams, and, you know, there's schemes that must be learned and new ways of thinking that must be digested, and, you know, that all takes some time. And there's something to that. I mean, remember when the 49ers acquired Garoppolo? I don't think he played for at least 3 weeks. It might have been four while he learned, you know, while he practiced, while he learned what guys could do, while he absorbed the playbook. So I think there's still some lingering sentiment to that. And then obviously we're in a pandemic right now, and there's not a burning desire across all of sports for owners to spend more money right now. You know, I mean, baseball's talking about its nuclear winter. And the NBA doesn't know when its season is going to start. And the NFL doesn't know how these playoffs are going to go off and what those revenues will look like. And will the Super Bowl definitely be on time? And what will the offseason look like? So, you know, the teams that had salary to dump, in many cases, chose to view those as football trades where we're going to maximize value rather than what they were, which is a way to clear money off the books. And the acquiring teams, the potential contenders, we're like, hey, we'll take that salary off your hands, but you got to help us out with some of that money, and you're not getting a first, a second, a third round pick for that guy. It's not happening. He's a rental for us, and he's a high cost rental at that. So the sort of market forces did not align.
It's an excellent explanation. Jason Lockenfora is joining us. All right, so let's talk about some individual situations. I had Jordan Wilkins of the Colts on, JLC, in the first hour. He had more than 100 yards from scrimmage. He had a touchdown in that win over Detroit. Now, their defense is playing at a really high level. You've written about this for CBSSports.com. How much of the credit goes to DeForest Buckner, and how far can they go with that defense?
I mean, I think a lot of the credit. I mean, he anchors like few people can, and he's, you know, a rare breed of defensive tackle who can penetrate the pocket, who can collapse it, who can do it himself in that regard, and then who's obviously exceptional against the run. And you think of all these blockbuster trades that have happened and how much, you know, the Raiders got for Khalil Mack and how much, you know, Amari Cooper and what Laremy Tunsil went for. I mean, a mid-first-round pick for Buckner, who's 25? I mean, yeah, you had to pay him, but the Colts had a lot of money to spend. Andrew Luck retired. You know, they hadn't gone big in free agency in a while. He's an absolute difference maker. I mean, that run defense is 20 yards a game better, and it's the same scheme. It's a lot of the same guys. Yeah, they're a little healthier at linebacker. The secondary, they brought in some guys who maybe are a little shorter tacklers who keep people from, you know, limiting how often they get past the third level and really break off long runs. But no, they don't have to blitz at all. They sit back. They play zone almost three-quarters of the time because they know with Buckner there and you know, Justin Houston still brings something off the edge, they don't have to devote numbers to affect the quarterback enough. It's kind of vanilla. It's not super sexy what they're doing over there, but it's been highly effective.
Jason Lockenfora joining us once again. All right, so they're at home, Jason, against Baltimore. Baltimore's got to go without Ronnie Stanley and Tyree Phillips on the offensive line. You certainly could argue that Lamar Jackson has been good, but not what he was last year. The loss is on the line. How big of a blow is that for them, and how do you think they'll adjust?
I think they'll be fine at left tackle. I think Orlando Brown going from the right side to the left side. Now, Orlando Brown was a hell of a college left tackle, and will he be everything Ronnie Stanley is at his best? Maybe not, but they're not going to have to alter what they do. The problem becomes the right side, where you know now it's DJ Fluker at right tackle instead of an all-pro or pro bowler in Orlando Brown. And right guard, they're going to have to probably rotate some guys around through practice and maybe a little bit in games before they figure out who the best replacement for Phillips is. The Ravens have had a very... from the point Ronnie Stanley gets hurt in that game and Judon gets ejected, it's been a bizarre week. I mean, Marlon Humphrey has COVID. He's been fighting with the media a little bit about, the regulations for what players should and shouldn't be doing. They don't really have a linebacker to speak of right now because they're all going to miss practice this week because they were close contacts of Marlon's. It's going to be a very strange week of practice. Sorry about that. Copper.
Is that Copper?
I'm a big Ravens fan, so, he's not happy with the state of affairs. Jim, it's a tough week for them, and they're facing an opponent that doesn't do anything all that remarkable offensively, but when Rivers protects the football, that defense can carry the day.
Jason, is that Copper?
I think I've got... I think I'm all right now.
It's Copper, though, right?
That's Copper. Yeah, one bad ACL and the mouth to back it up.
He's a warrior, man. He's the best. Jason Lockenfora joining us. All right, so as you pointed out on CBSSports.com, the Steelers, though, Jason, they were down 10 in the first half. They ran only 20 plays in that first half. Baltimore holds the ball for over 20 minutes in that half. Yeah, Pittsburgh comes back and they win.
Yeah.
How impressed are you with what they did and really what they've done over the course of the season?
Super impressed. And that's another game where they're undefeated. You can't say, oh, they didn't play anybody. They played a good team. And Tennessee the week before that was a good team. And the Steelers didn't play close to their A game for 60 minutes. They were dominated in the first half. And they won. And they won on the road. And they won overcoming a 10-point margin. And they won despite the other team rushing for 265 yards and them rushing for like nothing. And Connor basically being out of the game the whole second half because it was all five wide, hurry up, empty set. And, yeah, they still won. I mean, it was Lamar had a poor game, and those four turnovers certainly were the difference. I mean, that was the biggest factor. The Steelers, I think, are one of the few truly balanced teams in the NFL. They can beat you with the run. They can beat you with the pass. They can beat you with their defense. They can beat you with special teams. I think Kansas City can do that. I'm not sure anybody else in the AFC is in that category. And on the other side, I'm tempted to put Tampa there, but I don't know about anybody else because they all have their warts either offensively or defensively, or in some cases, kicking special teams.
Talking to Jason Lockenfora for a few more moments. JLC, since you mentioned Tampa, what does the arrival of Antonio Brown say about them? And then what do you make of Tom Brady going out of his way not only to fight for Brown but to bring him back into his home?
Yeah, I mean, I reported that 2 weeks ago on the NFL Today, and this past Sunday added even more to it, which is that not only is he going to be living there in the guest house or whatever, but that Tom Brady has vouched for his availability, for his temperament, for his attitude, for his off-field decision-making. Like, what time does he have to be there for COVID testing? Oh, yeah, he'll be there. I guarantee it, because I'm either driving him or my driver's driving him, but he's getting there. And what time does he have to be for meetings? And what time does he have to be in the facility? And what time would he have to be for treatment? And what's he going to be up to when he leaves the facility? I mean, he really gave across-the-board assurances that he's having a bad day. I'll get Tony Robbins on the phone with him. Like, he needs a massage. I got it covered. Like, he needs extra whatever. We got it. And the moment that fails or the moment that something happens to where Antonio Brown has an incident on the field or off the field, it's not going to be three strikes and you're out. It's going to be one and done. And that was made very clear to Tom Brady from Bruce Arians and other in that organization. In terms of what it says about them, it says about them that they're willing to win at all costs. That's a person whose behavior Even what's known, what's been captured on his own social media feed, or what he's said, or what you can go find him on video saying to various women who have been a part of his life in various capacities, there's enough there that it was a disqualifier for a number of owners. And if not for the presence of Tom Brady, it would have been a disqualifier there. It was last year, you know, it was for Bruce Arians and Jason Light a year ago. But he brings it on the field. And that, and Tom Brady has been talking for a calendar year now about what it was like that 1 week he practiced with this guy and that one game they played against the Dolphins and what a difference maker it was. And Robert Kraft wouldn't allow him back in that building, but the Glazers have let him in this building. And I suspect on Sundays he gets things done.
JLC joining us. JLC, one last question. The Giants are 1-7. They're right in the battle for the first pick in the draft, or at the very worst, one of the early picks. You saw Daniel Jones again this past Monday night. What do you think? Do they stay with him going forward, or do you think they look at Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, or somebody else if they're available when they're picking?
I think it all depends who's sitting in the chair, Jim. If it's still Dave Gettleman, I think he would hold an auction for that pick and try to get a ransom for it, and then say that's how we're going to build around even more Daniel Jones and incubate him. If he's not the GM, I think most guys who come in there, if you're guaranteed Lawrence, you're not finding out what the pick costs. Kind of like the Bengals with Burrow last year, where no matter what Miami or anybody else threw at him, they weren't moving. I think you have to take the player, and then you find out what you can get for Daniel Jones.
He is an NFL insider for CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Remember, he appears every single Sunday on the NFL Today during the regular season and the playoffs. Co-host of Inside Access on 105.7, The Fan in Baltimore. He is everywhere. Jason, thank you very much, man. Great
Always
job.
Always my pleasure, brother. Have a great week. Thank you.
You too, my man, JLC, one of my favorite people in the business. All right, really quickly, the What's Your Beef segment is coming up next. Hit me up. Call with your beef. 1-800-636-8686. Man, that phone bank is going crazy. But you might be able to get through. 1-800-636-8686. If you don't want to call, but you want to hit me up with a tweet, do that. At Jim Rome. The beef segment is coming up. Give you a little taste of this. Kyle tweets, I think you finished pretty good, Silk Bra. Signed, Matt in Vancouver. Romy, you rock. Tweets, dear Silk, now go home and get your shine box.
Now go home and get your shine box.
Woody Jr. 67
Romy,
tweets,
Silk,
Romy, you rock.
Romy, you rock.
Actually, let me rephrase that. Romy, you rock.
Romy, you rock.
Woody Jr. 67 tweets, the people have spoken. Nobody likes a tattletale. Adios, Silk. Steven PHX, I'll let Silk know the bad news when I wake him up in a couple of hours. Signed, Silk's wife. Mystic Rick is in. Silk came in 12th out of 15. Was this an election or a smack off? Squirrel 2 tweets, woe is me. I'll just have to go back to spending my wife's millions and being a substitute PE teacher on Zoom. Yours, concede, brah.
Brah.
D Rod in the 925 tweets, so classic that the moocher lost. Now get back to the kitchen and make your wife lunch and get to the chore list that she left on the fridge, loser. And Mark Moda tweets, I'm happy Silk lost for a whole different reason. Signed, IRA using Silk's failed campaign signs to add a second story to his cardboard house. JD tweets, damn, Jim. Damn right I live the American dream. Who doesn't want to get with porn stars? Signed, Tito.
Tito, go ahead. Tell him what I do so well.
Well, he talks well. His mouth has gotten him every fight, big fight that he's had.
Tito always says I'm using my mouth to get my opportunities. The only person I know that made money using their mouth is his ex-wife.
Well, just to correct you, I was never no marriage. You're a f***ing punk, dude. That's what you call class right here compared to no class.
That was a nasty line.
No class. No class at all. That's why you see him with thongs and f***ing jeans and a t-shirt. No class.
They don't call you the bad guy for nothing.
A bad girl.
Has anybody ever been happier about anything than Chael was with that? Tito, man, he walked right into that too, didn't he? Chael set him up. Not that that was hard to do in that case, but Chael's like, hey, Tito, why don't you tell them all how I got that fight? And Tito's like, happy to do so. You did it with your mouth. Chael just set him up. Like, he walked right into that. When we come back, you can walk right into the beef segment. We do it every Wednesday, generally in the second hour. What's your beef? What are you beefing about? It can be anything at all. Call me with your beef. 1-800-636-8686. Tweet me your beef at Jim Rome. That segment's next. Yogi Roth is coming up at 40 past. We're talking Pac-12 football. Finally, the Pac-12 coming to the party.
Finally.
That's coming up at 40 past. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So, as you know, not all beef jerky is the same. In fact, Old Trapper is so much better for you and higher in essential protein than chips, sugar-filled energy bars, or candy. Ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares Old Trapper with your beef. It's a first. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you will not believe what you're seeing. First of all, you're seeing the lids. Look at the XR4 Ti. Look at the other side of the glass. That's Hawk waving at you. They're wearing their Old Trapper camo lids. From my left to my right, Alvy, Hawk, Rit, all wearing the lids. So you might be asking yourself, well, why aren't you wearing yours, Rome? Because I've got something even better. After several years of doing our simulcast, we have ourselves product placement. Look at the pyramid of beef.
Is this the beef jerky segment?
Oh, yeah, it is. Check it out. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, look at that gigantic pyramid of beef right next to me. Let's get right at it. Quickly, what's your beef? Let's start on social. Vic Rudy. My beef is Joe Buck. We know Troy Aikman is a Hall of Famer. Stop with these annoying intros. And they do that everywhere. Wherever there's a Hall of Famer, the Hall of Famer is always introed as the Hall of Famer. I love this guy's handle, at Lanier Messenger. Props, bro. God, that was the 39 worst days of my life, selling the Lanier Messenger. My beef is that Silk didn't have fake Silk do his speeches.
Come on.
Look who's back. At Romy, you rock. What's my beef? My beef is with substitute teachers that gravy train their hardworking wives, try to run for political office, and are surprised that they didn't win. Stay in your lane, Silk.
Romy, you rock.
Doyer Blue Raul. That's his handle. He tweets, Dear Jim, my beef is with 72-year-old Tom Brady, still throwing lasers and running from dudes half his age while I can barely make it up one flight of stairs to my bedroom. Daniel tweets, Jimmy, I have a beef with the citizens of Huntington Beach, signed Eric Silkinson. Jim, my beef, this is actually an awesome email. Dear Jim, my beef is with the follically challenged bag I saw driving down the boulevard in front of me with his convertible top down over the weekend. Note to bag. I get it. The weather was nice. You want to show off your sled. Unfortunately, I had to be behind you, getting sprayed with that snake oil / magic potion that was slathered into that shredded wheat biscuit sitting on your dome. Keep your top up, loser. Jim and Temecula, that's really good. Dear Jim, my beef is with being the day after Election Day and political attack ads still polluting the airwaves. putting up with these god-awful ads for the past 5 months have been enough of an affront on humanity. I sure as hell don't need them after the election is over. Mike in KC. Hey, Rome, I have a beef. It's with you bored to death Facebook people who have to take a selfie of your chest showing your I voted sticker. Even the kids by the front door on the first day of school picks think that's stale. Here's an idea. Place your vote. Go home, you bags. Aaron in Iowa. Hey, Rome, my beef is with people who park their car right beside yours when there are 100 open spaces in the lot. That's a great beef. That's strong. Jeremiah in Greenville. Jimmy, I got a beef with those monthly emergency alert system tests. Why can't they tell you up front that it's just a test? Instead, they blare that doomsday tone for what seems like an eternity while you contemplate your imminent death before saying, just kidding, you're not going to die. It was only a test. Knock it off, EAS. You're scaring the crap out of people.
Knock it off!
Brent in PC at Wooden Laconic. My beef is with the guy at the urinal who inexplicably continues to whistle a tune even after we awkwardly make eye contact as I enter the restroom. Let's go to the phones. We're doing the What's Your Beef segment, and we're doing it on the phones. All right. I knew this guy would have beef. After all, he did finish in 12th. Let's go to the candidate himself, Huntington Beach, Silk Bra. Eric, what's going on?
Bruh, my beef is that I got screwed in the election. And I'm going to take it all the way to the Huntington Beach Supreme Court. Come on.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
That was the fake Silk. And the fake Silk, I believe, just said, I'm going to take my beef all the way to the Huntington Beach Supreme Court.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on.
Back at it. What's your beef? Let's go to the phones. We go to Orlando. Steven in Orlando. Steven, what is your beef?
My beef is with the government of the Philippines. I ran into an article on the UK news outlet, the BBC, of a police officer that got...
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Like, I know that guy, and I can't quite figure out how I know that guy. I feel like maybe he was one of the self-glossers. Was that the rooster? It would stand to reason, right? His beef was cockfighting. And he self-glossed the rooster. I think. Now, I think that story that he told is actually a true story. I think a cop did die trying to break up either the ring or the rooster fight itself. Either way, he got run. Listen, beef segment is for you to share your beefs. You don't get run. Like, if you have an actual beef and you treat this thing with the respect it deserves, you won't get run. And how can you not treat it with respect? I've got the entire XR4TI on the other side of the glass rocking their camo lids. And if you're watching me on TV right now during the simulcast, look at the pyramid of beef I have to my left. Let's keep going. 1-800-636-8686. What is your beef? Kenny, Albany. Kenny, what's up? What's your beef?
Hey, nothing but respect for you, Jim. My beef is with a lack of conversation about a New York Jets perfect season. I remember how hyped you were for the 08 Lions, and I know the sequel is never good as the original, but Pim, trust me, get hyped. There is not a window on that schedule. We will not choke this away. It's the perfect season. War Joe Namath getting caught in a malted hog friends with Susie Colbert. Late.
My man, Kenny. Nothing but respect. Now, you're right. Hey, listen, I am hyped. I'm always hyped for a team to run the table backwards. Running the table backwards to me is so much more impressive than finishing undefeated. It's just that it's been done before. It's never going to be as good as the first time. But you're right. It doesn't mean that it's not an amazing accomplishment, because the Jets are bad enough to do it. I got news for you. The Giants, although they do play hard for Joe Judge, and they do. I'll give you that. They do play hard for Joe Judge. They're also bad enough to do it. It's a good thing they've got that one win on their record already, because that could be a loss. All right, now, in terms of the cockfighting guy who got run, I said that it's vaguely familiar to me. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I think he's the guy, and I knew he was a self-glosser. He's the chicken man, I think, right? Let's go to Orlando. Hi, who's this?
Romy, they call me the chicken man.
Really, why?
I have been on a bit of a healthy kick as of late, and all I do is eat chicken for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I am practically bringing these poor fowls to the brink of extinction. Not to mention the fact that the chicks love me, and I have a big rooster.
Wow. That guy. And wouldn't you know that on the day of What's Your Beef, he would beef about that story in the Philippines about cockfighting. The chicken man. Why do the chicks love the chicken man? Quote,
"Bah-gah!" And I have a big rooster.
Bah-wah! What's your beef? I mean, I could keep doing this for a long, long time, but thankfully, Yogi Roth joins me when we come back. There is your beef segment. Hope you enjoyed that. A lot of beef still on hold, too. Time for a sports update. Here is your sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
All good things come to an end. All good things must come to an end, including our What's Your Beef segment, but I'll bring that back next week. Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. Great to be with you live in Southern California like I am every Monday through Friday. We are joined right now by a Pac-12 football analyst and a filmmaker and a New York Times bestselling author and host of the Yogi Roth Show podcast. Good friend of the program. He holds the honor of being the very first in-studio guest on CBS Sports Network and the only man who gets his own custom greeting on this program. He is Yogi Roth. And Yogi, it is game week in the Pac-12. I'm just going to come right out and say it. How great is ball, my friend?
It's so good. And we finally say it, right? We've been anticipating. We've had a couple. Well, we might say it here. We might talk about football there. But now it's finally back on the West Coast. And I'm really proud about the process. They got it back here. And I'm really excited about the teams that are about to kick off.
I'm going to talk about some of those teams with you. It feels great to have it back. You know, Yogi, I had Carl Durrell on the show yesterday. I know you've spoken to him recently. Overall, in your conversation with Pac-12 coaches, how have they approached this fall and getting ready and prepared for the upcoming season?
Well, what a great question. I think the word of the year is fluid, right? And just kind of, I just got off the phone with the head coach in this conference before this, and it's taken it literally day by day, right? Because we've seen around the country where, you know, one day, one test can change the trajectory of your program and what's going on with it. So I think that's the word. I also think that for coaches like Carl Durrell and some of the new coaches in this conference, the time away from the game, at one time you were like, man, this is going to be bad for Colorado. Carl Durrell needs to get on the field with his players. And now I look at how the season has kind of shaped out in terms of being postponed. He's had a lot of extra time in terms of 12 hours per week to be with his team on the field, unique time with his players, of course, on Zoom, powerful time around social justice and everything that the Buffs are doing as an example, that I think it's going to allow first-year coaches like him to not be at the disadvantage that we thought they would be when spring ball got postponed and training camp got postponed. I think it's actually going to be a relative net positive for programs like that in terms of how they've prepared for their upcoming season.
Yogi Roth is joining us. All right, so Oregon is number 12 in the AP poll. They're going to open up against Stanford. What kind of a season are you expecting from the Ducks now that Justin Herbert is in the NFL?
I can't wait, man. I'm excited for this program. Now, it's to be noted, they lost every starter on the offensive line, right? They don't return, I think they returned one start, which is the youngest in the country. 74% of their team are underclassmen. But Mario Cristobal has recruited as well as anybody in the country since he's become the head coach there. They also, I think they've got an incredible culture. And I think culture is going to be, it's dramatically overused. But I think this year in the Pac-12, it's a critical word because if you have one that's built upon discipline, built upon trust, built upon all the things that every coach says to his team, then you're going to be able to hopefully stay relatively COVID-free. You're also going to be able to focus with no crowds, especially if you're young, and focus on the goal that you had, which for Oregon coming into the season pre-pandemic with the likes of Penei Sewell, Javon Holland, Thomas Graham Jr., Brady Breeze. Those are players that have opted out for the NFL. They were loaded. I mean, they were the darling pick for the college football playoff outside of Bama, Ohio State, and Clemson. So I think that their culture, next man up, some of the younger players that I referenced among that percentage of youthful underclassmen, I think they're going to meet the moment. I really do. I don't think it'll be easy. I don't think they need to win with style points like we thought a couple weeks ago when the seven-game schedule was announced. I think because the Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas, I think they've taken that conference out of the playoff discussion. I think if the Ducks can go undefeated, which I think they can, they'll have every opportunity to get to the playoff. And by the end of the season, with their new offense, new coordinator, new quarterback, and, oh, by the way, probably best running back in the conference, and C.J. Verdell, they have a chance to make some real noise. So I'm buying on the Ducks. I'm all in on them. It won't be an easy road by any stretch, but I love what they're building there, and I think they're really creating a lot of steam for the years to come.
Pac-12 firing up. Justin Herbert is moving on. Yogi, I got to get your thoughts on him. What about Herbert? What do you make of the job that he has done since taking over as starter for the Chargers?
Well, you feel it just like I do, man, in this, you know, in this community here in Southern California. He's really respected, right? It's not like he came in and just had to play because of injuries. I mean, he's played because at a high level because that's who he is. You know, I go back to why he returned to Oregon for his senior year. It wasn't only to take a team that went 4-8 his freshman year when he was thrust into the limelight to a Rose Bowl like he did last year, but it was to learn how to become a pro. And he hasn't flinched on this stage. You know, his maturity has shown. His ability to just do his job has shown. I think when I watch him, I don't see him over-trying and trying to make, you know, plays that a lot of guys can make in college because of undisciplined defenses or just defenses being out of position a little bit. I don't see that. I see him operating, but not being robotic. So I'm excited, and I think his personality fits L.A. regarding he's not looking for attention, he's not seeking a spotlight, but he can handle it. And I think that's the mixture, that's the potion for somebody who could be a superstar in the face of a franchise. And I think that's him. And I'm quite honestly, I'm not surprised by the way that he's played by any stretch of the imagination because this is who he is. Dude's an elite passer. He sees the field really clean. He's brilliant. And you talk to him in terms of the type of mind that he has. So processing and handling the hype and the stage has really been impressive. And I kind of expected it whenever he got his opportunity.
I couldn't be more impressed. I love everything about the guy. It's everything to the points you just made. He's cerebral. He can beat you with his arm, with his legs. The guy's not afraid at all. Really good athlete. I love the guy and the way he's playing. Yogi, what about USC? They're number 20 in both polls. They open up against Arizona State. What are your early thoughts on the Trojans this season?
Really anticipating watching them compete. I mean, if you think about it, the quarantine and all the postponements, no team has probably benefited more in terms of recruiting, the brand. I mean, if you asked a fan, like, hey, who did USC play last? I don't think everybody would say Iowa in their bowl game. And, you know, they couldn't deal with the defensive front of the Hawkeyes. I don't think anybody's going to say that. I think they're going to say, man, they're crushing recruiting. Did you see that new video that they took down on Twitter? You know, they're working on the branding. They got this great quarterback. They got skill positions for days. That's going to be the narrative on them, and they're right. The challenge is they're going to get tested right off the bat against a team in Arizona State that has, I think, an NFL player at every position. You know, they got real depth, but as does USC. So I think the reason I would pick SC in the South, which is what I would do heading into the season, is not only they're going to score a lot of points. I mean, that's college football that we're in, and they got elite receivers. We know all that. But it's the middle of their defense, man. You know, they lost Jake Tafele, who opted out, who I thought was the best interior defensive lineman in this conference. But they return a bunch of players who played a lot, like Marlon Tuipulotu. He's been playing since he got on campus. At linebacker, Pali'ie Naoteote. I'm telling you, watch number one. He'll be all over the field. He's one of my favorite players in the country. And then Talanoa Hufanga, their starting safety. You know, he's kind of been mentored a little bit, I understand, by Troy Polamalu over the course of the last couple months. He's a guy that could have easily opted out. So I look at the middle of their defense, and I think it's real. Granted, new defensive coordinator, new system. But if they can get the play that is expected out of their corners, which they'll get tested in this conference, as you know, they'll have a chance to take a run at this thing and be undefeated. Explosive plays have been an issue for them over the last couple of years. They can eliminate those. I think they're going to have a chance to bring back the swagger, bring back, you know, all the attention, all the limelight, all the historical elements that we've come to love USC for. I think they had a chance to do it because I think they have the horses down the middle of the defense that will allow them to slow some teams down.
It is great to not only talk ball, but talk Pac-12 ball. Yogi, what about the Pac-12 overall? Do you see a pathway for a Pac-12 team to the college football playoff?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll flip it on you. Like, you watch all these games, and I think the staggered start has been brilliant. Like, I don't want Corona to ever be a part of our lives again or a pandemic, but I love the staggered start to a season because you don't miss any games. So I've watched Oklahoma, huge brand, incredible program. They don't look that impressive, though, in terms of being an elite program where you just give them the benefit of the doubt. Same thing with Georgia, same thing with Florida, same thing with Michigan, same thing with all these big brands that a lot of the times I think because of either weak non-conference games or, you know, a 6-0 start, all of a sudden they're just lauded and given the benefit of the doubt. Now, because of the lack of games, I don't know if you'd agree, but you kind of watch and you're like, yeah, if like Cal or ASU or Oregon or SC or Utah, if they went and had to go play or UW had to play any of those teams that I just referenced, I wouldn't be scared of those games. I just wouldn't. I think everybody kind of looks the same. So I think that's going to benefit the Pac-12 because I think the committee, of course, is watching every game. And because of the staggered start, have been able to probably focus even more on some of these other teams in these conferences. So I don't think that the Pac-12, by any stretch of the imagination, is out because of just the above-average play by some of the elite blue-blood programs that we've seen. So an undefeated team to me gets in, and I don't even think it's a big discussion, but I don't know. What do you think? That's crazy?
Yes, no, I don't. I would agree with you. I think that's fair. I mean, I want to see how this all plays out and how they look, some of these teams we're talking about in the Pac-12. But yes, nobody else to me is standing out head and shoulders above everybody else. Yogi, I want to ask you about something. I want to step away from football for a moment and talk about life. This is something you and I do pretty frequently when you come on. I want to ask you about your mom for a moment. She passed away on October 20th, and you wrote a beautiful reflection about her and how she lived her life and the fact that she was a daughter of Holocaust survivors. What was your mom like as a person?
Oh, man. I don't know where you're going to go with that. I appreciate you bringing that up. She was awesome. She loved college football. She loved when I came on your show. She always would tune in, man. So thanks for doing that, because always big smile to her face. But I'll never forget this. I was with her, and she had lung cancer, and she was diagnosed on Christmas Eve, which was the day we found out we were having a baby boy. So it was kind of like that whole life in, life out moment. And she competed like you'd imagine, you know, somebody that I'm like my parent to compete, like daughter of Holocaust survivors to compete. She just wouldn't flinch. And it was the last couple, it was really one of the last days I was with her, and she was frail, you know, cancer had kind of taken over her body, and she was changing her bed, changing her sheets. And I said, "Let me help you." And she goes, "No, Yogi, you can tie me, but I'm going to do this on my own." She just had this grittiness to her. So she did it, and as she was doing it, and you have to imagine, if she was picking up one sheet, Jim, it'd be like you picking up a 50-pound dumbbell. I mean, she barely could do it. She didn't have a lot of energy. She couldn't catch her breath because where the cancer was located, right next to her heart. And she said, "You know why I love sheets so much?" And I said, "No, Mom, I have no clue." And she goes, "Because when I was a kid, I slept on newspaper, and I slept in a drawer, and we didn't have any money. And my mom, once we came to America, she said, when we save up money, we're going to make sure we have great sheets in this house." And she turned to me and she said, "Yogi, when you're at somebody else's home who is an immigrant, who is a refugee who had nothing, and you sit on their bed and you see the sheets that they have or the pillows that they have or all the things that, you know, they may have that you would perceive as nice, recognize they probably didn't have any of that. And somebody had to really go to work. And somebody had to compete. And somebody had to have grit. And somebody had to have, you know, charm. And somebody had to have passion. Somebody had to have heart. Like, somebody had to have all those intangibles just for the simple thought of, hey, I want to put sheets on the bed." And what that did for me was not only like brought tears to my eyes hearing her share that as I thought about my mom sleeping on newspaper, but it also like reminded me of like where you come from, right? And I think it's really important now, and I've urged so many people who are parents who, you know, are into their last stage of life to like share with their kids. Because us as children, we need to know that we're a part of something greater than ourselves. Like for me, that cemented like my, like that made sense. That's why I'm so gritty. That's why I'll take anybody, you know, to the carpet all day long. Like I just have a no flinch, no quit mentality in life. That's why it's a walk on to him as a broadcaster. But hearing it, my mom tell this story made sense to me of like why, you know, I am the way that I am. And I just urge parents to tell those stories and kids to ask them, because it would have killed me if somebody told me that story when we were sitting Shiva for her versus her telling me that. So yeah, as a human, man, she was awesome, and I appreciate you asking me about her.
Yogi, I'm really sorry for your loss, but what an amazing story that was you just shared. I'm so glad that you did that. And she sounds absolutely amazing. Yogi Roth, Pac-12 football analyst. He's a filmmaker. He's a best-selling author. He is host of the Yogi Roth Show podcast. Good friend of the program as well. Yogi, great to have you on. Great to hear your voice. I am very sorry for your loss, but what a great story. Listen, have a great weekend. Ball is back, and I know you and I will do it again soon.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. Lots of love. Appreciate it.
You're the best. Yogi Roth is one of the most interesting people I know, honestly, in or out of the business. And that is an amazing story he told about his mom. We come back with hour number three. Phone lines are open. You can find me on social. We will reset third hour straight ahead.